1 year ago in 2012, a crack duo, one martial arts expert and surprisingly good mimic, the other a weapons specialist and professionally bearded, were sent to separate recording stations thousands of miles apart to do an 80s and 90s action commentary podcast for a crime they happily committed. Something James Spader told them about that involved an industrial drum of coconut butter hand lotion and a common household whisk. These men promptly created a passion-filled wave of action adoration that swept throughout the internet underground. Today, still wanted by Steven Seagal for making one too many jokes about his expanding gut and knitted hair, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you love action, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you should be listening to Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentaries. This podcast, people, explodes.
Hello, and welcome to Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid commentary podcast. I am Dr. Action.
And I am the Kick-Ass Kid, and we record this podcast while crawling through air conditioning vents in dirty vests.
Very dirty vests. James Spader let us borrow them.
Yes. They're vests from James Spader's personal wife-beater collection. So called, in fact, because he does beat his wife with them. But she likes it like that. The filthy, filthy bitch.
Yeah, she loves it.
And we've got something of a special episode this evening, so why don't you tell the our present and valued listeners all about it?
We tonight... Myself, Dr. Action, and Mr. Kick-Ass Kid...
Hello there.
...are going to be running an interview with a Mr. Richard Pearse, who has just written an action movie.
He has. For which icon of 80s and 90s action, sir?
Olivier Gruner.
Gruner, indeed. And, so we're going to be talking to Richard. In fact, should we try and get him on the line, sir?
Let's do it.
Let's do that thing. So how do we do that?
You're the technical man.
That'll be me trying to add someone to the conversation. Okay, it's calling.
Oh, it's like going live again.
It is. It's always exciting when we ring someone across the other side of the country, no less. We are now going live to Las Vegas.
Hello?
Ah, there he is. Mr. Pearse, how are you, sir?
How are you guys doing?
Very good.
Good.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
Okay, so that is Dr. Action. I'm the Kick-Ass Kid. And live with us now from Las Vegas is none other than Mr. Richard Pearse. Say hello, sir.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Very good, thanks.
Very well, thank you.
And why have we got Mr. Pearse on the show, Dr. Action?
Well, I believe he's just wrote an action movie, and it's been made, hasn't it, sir?
Yes, it just finished shooting a few weeks ago, and I actually just got to see the first cut of it yesterday.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I was going to say, that must be absolutely thrilling. Is this your first screenplay?
Well, it's not my first. Well, I mean, I wrote in school, went to film school, and... Of course, I've written a bunch, but that's not worth anything. It's my first produced one. So, yeah, it's extremely exciting to have my first produced screenplay and get to watch it. And actually, you know, the crazy thing is that it's got some people in it who I actually grew up kind of idolizing and kind of watching their movies when I was a kid. And some of them are actually in the film. So it's been kind of a crazy experience.
That's fantastic. So, I believe Dr. Action's got some questions and some things, and we're going to discuss that movie. But congratulations, sir, from both of us. Thanks. That's absolutely fantastic. We can't wait to watch it and see the film. But, Doc, why don't you take it away, sir?
Right, then. Question one. So, growing up then, you said that some of your action idols were in the film. Who were your action idols growing up?
Well, Olivier Gruner is the star of this movie, Private Contractors, that I just wrote. But it sounds to me like I've kind of familiarized myself with your guys' podcast since I found you guys on Twitter a couple months back. And a lot of the same guys, like Seagal was like a god to me when I was a kid. Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, anything that was like 80s or 90s action was really big to me. I love that genre of stuff.
What's funny is that Seagal is now a god to himself.
Yeah, whatever. He's god or whatever he is. So, yeah, absolutely. He's a god to others, too, apparently, as well. So, yeah.
Although, of course, you might have to be careful with what you say in case you ever write a Seagal movie.
we'll have to worry about that when it happens. But, sure. Yeah, I definitely.
I heard you on that podcast talking about me. Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing. When I was in college, my degree was in kind of like a hybrid of journalism and screenwriting. I did the movie reviews for my college, and after a couple of years of me writing for them, I got to have my own movie column, and I was a big fan of Mystery Science Theater growing up, so I kind of did like a literal version of that where I just wrote reviews of bad direct-to-video movies every week. Whatever was on the shelf that week, I would go find like the worst one I could find and do it. And ultimately, a lot of them wound up being Seagal movies because he was churning out a lot of stuff at that time. And I remember writing a review, and like I've grown up loving action movies, and of course, you know, I realize it's very unlikely, but yeah, I was always like, my dream would be to write a direct-to-video action movie or to write an action movie of any capacity. And I remember I reviewed a Seagal movie, and the whole time I'm writing, I'm like, you know, if there's the 1% chance I ever wound up writing a movie of his, I would hope he never Googled my name and found that. But again, what are the odds of that happening? But we'll have to see.
I hear that he's a regular subscriber to the show, and he enjoys it. No, I'm kidding.
Just burned.
We've never had any contact with him.
nothing to worry.
So obviously Oliver Green is in the movie. Is one of your favorite films Nemesis?
It's up there. I mean, it's definitely one of my favorites of his. I remember growing up, my favorite Olivier Green movie when I was a kid, the one that I wound up renting week after week, was a movie called Automatic. I don't know if you guys would have seen that or not.
I've got that.
Automatic. Yeah, that one's awesome. The kind of hybrid Die Hard / Terminator kind of ripoff movie. But that one was my favorite. Nemesis is definitely a big movie of my childhood. I remember watching that one quite a bit. Like as a kid, though, my favorite movie, and still is to this day, is Die Hard. Has always been my favorite film since I was a little kid. It's kind of the one that got me into wanting to do this, hopefully one day for a living.
That's great. That's fantastic. So who's directed Private Contractors?
It's Olivier Gruner.
I read that earlier online.
Yeah, he is starring in it and he's directing it. Fortunately I was able to work with him and get to write it, but yeah, he's kind of a one-man machine. He's kind of taken on so many roles with this movie. He just wrote, or he had written and directed a movie a few years back that actually just came out that I don't know if you guys have seen it, but they retitled. It was called Regenerator. So this is his second movie, but that he's directed himself in. I definitely, like I said, I saw the first cut the other day, and it looks pretty solid. Actually, I was impressed with what they got for the budget.
Excellent. So how closely did he work closely with you while directing?
Yeah, he was at, because he's in Vegas too. He's half and half. That's actually how I met him, was we both were here in town, and I grew up a big fan of his, so it was kind of a chance meeting. And of course, I had to unload my nerdiness, my fanboyism on him when I first met him. But then I said, "Oh, by the way, I'm trying to do screenwriting," and this is when I was still in school. And he's such a cool guy. He actually kept in contact with me. We just, you know, kept like a Facebook kind of connection that way, and every 6 or so months I would send him a message like, "Hey, I'm still trying to, you know, if you ever need me a PA or anything like that, or screen anything writing, I'd be happy to help out." And after about 2 years, he actually had a project coming up, which was this, and he was looking for a writer, and it just happened to work out that way.
That's great.
Yeah,
obviously you're a big fan of his. Who else is in the film that you grew up watching?
Well, and this is something I actually had to check because I didn't know if this is something they've put out online yet. I know it's the film's not on IMDb yet, so I don't know if this has even been released. But the villain for the movie that he was one of the last things they shot because we didn't know who we'd get is going to be Eric Roberts.
Awesome.
Yeah, which I was really excited about because, I mean, you know, it's my first produced screenplay. I got an Academy Award nominated actor in it, which is kind of a cool thing to think about.
And he was the villain in Expendables 1.
He was, so. Yeah. And the film, I mean, Olivier had made a movie with him back in the 90s. TNT was the name of the movie. So they had worked together, and of course, that was they shot most of the film out in L.A., and I managed to get out to the set a couple times. But for the Eric Roberts shoot, I wasn't able to make it, and I regret it because I got to see the footage for the first time the other day in the cut, and he's really good in it. He's awesome. He's always a great bad guy in everything he does. He's always awesome.
He's one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood, I think.
Yeah, and he worked recently with Gary Daniels on something, right?
Oh, really?
Wasn't he Steve Austin and Gary Daniels? Didn't they do after The Expendables, didn't they all do another movie together?
Hunt to Kill?
I think so. I think they're all in that.
Yeah, Gary Daniels, I know, was in that one, yeah. Which, by the way, I followed your Gary Daniels month. That was awesome, guys.
Well, it's still sort of unofficially going on because we are doing Fist of the North Star. This episode will go up this week. This interview just sort of stand alone with a little bit of conversation with the Doc and I around the interview, and then we have both watched Fist of the North Star, so we're going to be doing that next week.
Cool. Yeah. Did you guys ever do? Because my favorite Gary Daniels was Cold Harvest. Did you guys do that one, or was?
We did. Yeah. Not only did we do it, I was very lucky. It all came about around the same time, but I was very lucky to get an interview with the other show that I do, the After Movie Diner, with Barbara Crampton. And we knew that we had the Cold Harvest on our radar because the doc had just sent it through to me in the US, because he picks up this stuff for cheap in the UK very often. Mm-hmm. And he'd sent me a whole big stuff, and he'd sent me Cold Harvest, and I had watched it, and I think it's really, really good. I love that.
Yeah.
Love that movie. I think it's a really underrated one.
Yeah.
And at the very end of my interview, and she was very gracious to give me like a 45-minute interview, at the very end I said, you know, I do this other show. It's sort of comedic and action and stuff like that. But, you know, I know the doc would hate it if I didn't ask you about Cold Harvest. And she actually, like, really, like, brightened up. Like, she never gets asked about that film. And she said, you know, it was fantastic making the film. So I think when the Cold Harvest show is out there that we've done, mm-hmm. and I forget whether the interview I put on at the beginning or at the end of the show, but it's either the first 10 minutes or the last 10 minutes of that show will have about a little 5-6 minute clip of me talking to Barbara about Cold Harvest specifically. And then the rest of the Barbara Crampton interview can be found on the Stuart Gordon special that I did over on the diner.
Gotcha. And she was the female lead in that movie, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Been a while since I've watched it. But yeah.
Yeah. But, her beautiful back, yeah. It's the infamous scene of him polishing his gun, while looking at her back, which is, yeah.
Classic.
Oh, yeah, classic and classic.
Right up there. It's on AFV's, or AFV, AFI's top 100 scenes of all time, it should be.
It should be, and absolutely. I'm not even kidding. It was great. We were going to do Queen's Messenger, and we'd found some stills from that of him holding a passport out of the window. And one of our friends, using, you know, a Photoshop or something, put in the exact still of Barbara Crampton's back from Cold Harvest over the passport. So it looked like he was holding up a picture of her back, and then we're underneath it, "Have you seen this back?" Which I just thought was hilarious. But, awesome. But yeah, Gary Daniel and his back fascination just kept us chuckling for a long time. But actually have to say, the more we wade into the Gary Daniels, the more that I hadn't really sort of heard of him before doing the show. So it's only really in the last kind of year that I've kind of gone into his stuff. Yeah, I love it more and more and more each one I see. So
yeah, definitely.
But sorry, that derailed the conversation somewhat.
Yeah, it's ruined. This interview's over. See
it. No. I was going to say, all right. So, as you're a screenwriter, who's your idols?
In terms of, obviously with Die Hard being my favorite movie, Stephen E. D'Souza is one of my favorites. He wrote a bunch of, Commando and stuff like that. David Goyer is a guy I always like. The Blade movies and stuff like that, that he wrote. But I mean, I actually really kind of dig, again, because of the genre I like. And, you know, when you're a kid and you're pretty much living in the video store every weekend, renting, you know, as many movies as my parents would let me. Once you get through the basics, like the big movies like Die Hard and Speed, I had to start delving into the direct-to-video genre, like the Don Wilson and Gary, or Don the Dragon Wilson and Gary Daniels, Jeff Speakman movies, Olivier Gruner. And that's where I kind of discovered a bunch of this like whole other world of direct-to-video movies. And there's a guy, you know, a couple of guys like Steve Latshaw is a guy who wrote a ton of movies in the 90s. William C. Martel, who wrote the best screenwriting book I've ever read. Actually, it's a perfect screenwriting book if you ever want to do like action movies. Of course, I don't remember the title. It was just like the Secrets of Action Film Writer or something like that. But the guys who wrote a lot of stuff in the 90s just kept churning them out, you know, 2-3 movies a year. Those guys kind of were cool to me to see that it's not just, you know, it's kind of, there's a formula to it. And you kind of just keep pumping them out, which is kind of what my theory was in school, was to write as many screenplays as I could. So that way, if opportunity ever arose, again, I'm in Vegas, so there's not too much out here, I'd be ready for it. And fortunately, it kind of worked out so far, at least.
Yeah, it always makes me laugh whenever you see these new directors or new screenwriters, and they, you know, they invariably end up doing a remake or something. It always makes me laugh because I always believe, like when I do writing and stuff as well, that you have as many script ideas or screenplay ideas or, you know, things that you can kind of hand over. Oh, you don't like this one? Well, I have these 15 other stories I've written. So I think that's a really good thing to do and a really good thing to have in your back pocket.
Yeah. And I mean, when I was in school, I mean, I didn't go to any prestigious film school or anything like that. But, you know, I went to school with tons of kids who wanted to be, you know, the next Tim Burton or Tarantino. And they were always trying to reinvent the wheel and kind of in the genre I like. Which is action. You know, you go rent 10 Steven Seagal movies, you're basically seeing the same movie kind of 10 different ways.
Right.
Same thing with Die Hard. And I mean, that's kind of the example I always gave is like, I love, especially the first three Die Hards, because they're kind of the same story. And even when you get to movies like Speed, it's Die Hard on a bus or Under Siege, Die Hard on a ship. I don't think you always need to reinvent the wheel, but you kind of need to just present, I don't want to say you want to keep churning out the same stuff, but you, with the action genre, it seems like there's 5 different stories you can tell, and it's just how uniquely you tell that story. There's revenge stories, there's one guy versus an entire, you know, team of guys, diehard kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's I always like the idea of kind of sticking to the formulas, but tweaking it slightly and trying to get unique. Yeah, because I mean, you're not going to reinvent the wheel with an action movie. Oftentimes, it's just give us the same thing but different.
Well, in fact, it's often one of my arguments about remakes is that, well, look, in the action genre, like you say, people can, you can churn out the same story, but just put a little twist on it or a little different guy in the lead or a different setup or a different country. Yeah. Or, you know, there's plenty of South American countries that need, you know, people going down there. One man, you know, mercenary teams can go down into whatever it is. Rather than just saying, oh, well, let's remake Die Hard. Well, no, let's just make another one, or let's call it, you know, Die Hard on a plane or Die Hard
exactly.
in the ocean or whatever it is, you know. So I much prefer that mentality. I think it's you know, because like you say, there's only about 5 or 6 stories to tell. But if you tell them well and you put the action in the right bits and you have some, you know, good one-liners, it can carry the whole thing along. It's all about pacing, really, isn't it? Action films, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, it's yes, it definitely is. I have a kind of story about that. But I mean, yeah, like you were saying, you go see the Rocky series, it's Rocky 1 repeated 6 times, but just different. And I mean, I love the Rocky movies, and you know, Rocky 4 to me is one of the best bad movies ever made. I love that movie.
Yeah.
With all the training montages in it. But I mean, yeah, it's just you kind of do the same thing, but change it up a little bit to keep it new and fresh for the audience, definitely.
So would you be interested, other than writing, would you be interested in directing as well or producing?
I mean, after watching this, I don't know if I have the chops for it, man. It's, I mean, watching how, you know, this, I don't think I would be upsetting anybody involved in this movie. Saying it was on the lower budget side, which is, you know, just, you know, it's not a Hollywood, it's an independent action movie, but I mean, the stuff that got to be on screen, I mean, Olivier was very clever with how he shot it, how he filmed it. The sets they got are really awesome for this genre of movie. It's the scope of the movie is much bigger, and it's something, you know, when I was in school, I pretty much focused solely on writing, and that's kind of what I've always thought about. I mean, I'd love to give it a shot one day. Yeah, that'd be awesome. As to whether or not it'd be successful, I don't know. But yeah, maybe one day that'd be something I'd want to aim for.
Cool.
And what do you think? I have to ask, just because we've both just seen it, and I'm sure there's going to be a geek out session on it after we finish the interview. But what do you think about, obviously, you know, big action screenwriter, finally taking on one of these comic book movies with Shane Black doing Iron Man 3?
That's awesome. I mean, I'm the one person on Earth who still hasn't seen Iron Man 3. Have you guys both seen it?
We've both seen it. No, I didn't want to give it away. I just thought, we've had this whole thing of indie directors and horror directors and quirky directors taking on comic book movies. But finally, they're putting, you know, and comic book movies have become the big budget action movies of this generation.
Yeah.
So to finally match that with, you know, the 80s and 90s action sensibility of Black, which it very much does, and I'm not spoiling anything, it very much does. You're going to love it, I hope. I think that's a really good... It's weird because we had those movies that came out at the beginning of the year with Last Stand and Parker and Bullet to the Head, which weren't successful, but should have been huge. But it's nice to see just occasionally something like an Expendables or Shane Black doing Iron Man 3 being a huge success and kind of pumping just one last bit of life into the into the big budget genre. I know the low budget genre is going strong, but the big budget genre.
Yeah, no, and Shane Black, I mean, obviously with the Lethal Weapons, you know, I grew up loving those two. Always had a little resentment because they were like the competing franchise with Die Hard. So, of course, I always had to be like a Die Hard kid but rather than a Lethal Weapon. But, yeah, no, like Kiss, Bang Bang, and I'm sure Iron Man 3. Yeah, he's a great action writer, and hopefully the melding of the two, having it just this kind of, I don't want to say he's a straight action guy, because I'm sure, you know, he's a great writer, but having someone who's kind of known for just writing the straightforward action movies kind of cross into that is probably a good sign, because like you said, after Expendables 2, which I don't even know if that actually performed well or not.
It performed well overseas. I think it did like 300 mil overseas, but in the States it, I think in the States, the first one did like 100 and something, and the second one did like 80, 85 or something.
And that 100 on the first one was probably 30 million me seeing it 18,000 times in theaters.
Right.
I remember I went and saw the first one. I was still in college, so I had a few drinks before I went to see it. And my friends were telling me I was getting pretty emotional when Dolph Lundgren got shot halfway through and he was presumed dead. I apparently was getting very upset in the theater.
That's funny.
Dolph Lundgren might have died in a movie.
They're both great films, they are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, and like you were saying with The Last Stand, and I didn't see Last Stand, I saw Bullet to the Head, and it was a shame those didn't do well, because, I mean, the genre with Expendables looked like it might have been having a little bit of a comeback, and I'm sure it still is with Die Hard and all that stuff, which I don't know if that one did well or not either.
I wrote an article. Die Hard did very well, but then it's kind of Die Hard, and plus Bruce Willis has sort of been much more in the public eye than, you know, Stallone has been for his franchises, but not so much for standalone movies in the last sort of 10 years. Mm-hmm. And obviously Schwarzenegger's been out of the limelight since Terminator 3.
Yeah.
So I think The Last Stand did the best out of, if you're talking Last Stand, Parker, and Bullet to the Head, Last Stand did the best. But there wasn't very much. Parker did what Statham movies always do, which is not very much in the cinema, but then he'll probably do a ton on...
Kill on video, yeah.
On video. And he's got, like, four movies already, like, in the pipeline, so he's not sweating it. And it's just the fate of stuff like The Tomb, and then I know that...
Did that get retitled?
Yes. Escape Plan, now it's going to be called.
Yeah, the most generic title ever.
Yeah, well, The Tomb is such a cool title to some extent, except that obviously people are going to think it's a horror movie, I guess.
Yep, yeah.
But no, so, you know, we were kind of, it's funny, we ended 2012 kind of going, oh my God, I can't believe the first 4 months are going to be completely action-packed, not realizing that Iron Man 3 was going to be the same way it is. So actually, the first 5 months, there's been a big cinema release the first 5 months of this year that harked back to 80s, 90s action. Mm-hmm. And the first 3-4 months was just miserable. We were both coming back, like, geeking out on the movies and then looking at the returns and looking at the reviews and going, oh no, everyone hates them. It's such a shame, because we loved them. We thought they were all great. I mean, we're not necessarily the most discerning, but...
No, those movies are made for a certain audience, and Bullet to the Head certainly lived up. I loved that one. And that's what was kind of cool with the timing of this, was I was, you know, I'm getting to write my first kind of genre, you know, action movie, and I thought maybe it would be kind of cool timing that... you know, the genre is having a resurgence. I mean, 80s, 90s style action movies were dead. Like, The Matrix kind of killed it. Like, everyone's wanting sci-fi action and big budget stuff. And then, you know, Expendables comes out, and, you know, Expendables 2 was coming out right around the time I started writing this, I think. And yeah, it just was like, this is kind of a perfect timing. Maybe, you know, more people will want to rent this because of the genre kind of having a resurgence.
I think on video, if sort of my local Best Buy is anything to go by, you know, and IMDb and stuff, on video, people like Lundgren and Gary Daniels and like odd ones like Ving Rhames and who's the guy? Oh, Danny Trejo, people like that.
Yeah.
Steve Austin. They're kind of pumping out action movies seemingly like three or four a year. I mean, I wrote I wrote an article recently for our website about Dolph Lundgren, and he appears to have like 8 films and a TV show all filming right now.
I mean, that's for fans of the genre, that's awesome, because oh, yeah, you know, that in that period during the 2000s, like probably from 2000 to 2009 or whenever Expendables came out, it was kind of all but dead. And yeah, I mean, Seagal had what, I don't know if he has 2 shows going on still or not, but he had that reality show, and then the whatever this True Vengeance or True Justice, whatever it is that's on right now. I haven't gotten to see that either, but
it's appalling, but in the most delightful, okay. In the most delightful of ways. But
I saw a still from it where he had like a full on beard.
Yes. And that, where he has to wear a disguise to go in to some scene or whatever. No, he doesn't wear that beard all the time, sadly. Oh,
I was hoping it would just be him as a lumberjack the whole show.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? No, the funniest thing about that show is that it's basically like CSI Miami made by really inept people starring Steven Seagal. But the best bit was done on a Reels interview, because obviously like Reels have been... They're clearly hanging their entire career on Seagal's back, because they're just showing Seagal stuff over and over again on the Reels channel now. But... Mm-hmm. They interviewed him very briefly, and his quote on the set was, "I've worked in law enforcement. This is going to be the most realistic police drama ever." And his whole idea was this was going to be the most realistic show. Well, I've seen it, and, you know...
Looks pretty easy, doesn't it?
Like, I've made a more realistic police drama when I was 18 with a camcorder in my back garden. It's really...
Yeah, but you've not got Seagal vision.
No, I don't have Seagal vision. No, I don't.
You've got the beard.
I've got the beard, but not the Seagal vision. The ability to spot a perp as long as he's African American from 100 yards away.
Meanwhile, he's chasing black people all over the place. There's a bunch of white blokes robbing a TV store.
We're only making a joke, Richard, because if you haven't seen it on Lawman, Seagal drives around, obviously it's in Louisiana, but he drives around heavily African-American neighborhoods, arresting them for nothing. Which is kind of fun. Seriously, I'm not even kidding. He actually pulls one kid over because his T-shirt's too long. That's an actual thing. So
I'll have to give that one a rental.
Yeah. But no, I mean, getting back to more serious things is that, and touching on what I was saying about Dolph Lundgren and things, there seems to be, as I said, certain people are capitalizing on, I think, the success of The Expendables, and rightly so. That's awesome. And someone
6 movies this year, Dolph Lundgren.
Lundgren is clearly doing it right, I think. I think it's a shame that Van Damme isn't, because he was so good in the second one, and I wish Van Damme was, like, doing 4 or 5 of these movies a year like he used to. But are you finding, and in fact this goes on to the idea of you doing your second screenplay and moving forward, have you been introduced now, therefore, through Olivia Gruner and stuff, this world of, like, the straight-to-video action movie that exists now? Like, you used to have PM Entertainment and Canon and people like that. Is there now those similar companies or new companies that have been setting up? Or what's happening in the world of straight-to-video?
I wish I knew. I mean, I'm not in... I mean, I don't want to make it say like I wasn't there, but I mean, I was very involved in the process of making this film in some points. And then, you know, some points I'm not the director. I'm not one of the executive producers. So I don't know. I know his last movie got distribution pretty easy, and we're fingers crossed this one, I'm thinking is going to get distribution pretty easily as well. But as far as like a company that's just churning them out, like PM, which, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. That was huge when I was younger. Like, every PM movie, didn't matter what it was, if it said PM on the side, I rented it. Just because they were like they're a factory, man. They just made so many great action movies. A Canon too, with the American Ninjas and stuff like that. So as far as right now, I don't know. I don't think so. But again, I'm not the guy in that room making that conversation. So we'll have to wait and see. But I do think with the genre the way it is, and like his last movie that just came out, hopefully it's easy to get distribution. It's just out of nowhere.
But it's, you know, Eric Roberts and, you know, Olivia Gruner's still, you know, big names for his action fans. So
yeah, for the genre, I think that's a pretty good combo.
That's a fantastic combination. Especially, I mean, Eric Roberts is just... That's just amazing.
He's churning them out as well, of course. Now,
oh, yeah, Eric Roberts, I was looking at his IMDb. He's making quite a few. But, I mean, yeah, that was the cool thing for me. I mean, again, I'll nerd out, but it's like... You know, the bad guy from Expendables was in my movie, or the guy from Dark Knight. You know, the bad guy from Dark Knight's in my movie. So it's cool to think about. And yeah, he's for, you know, the type of actor he is, he's about as good as it gets. I love seeing him in any sort of villain role. I think he's great. Of course, in Best in the Best, he was, you know, that was another big movie when I was growing up. But I like him as a villain. He's a great villain.
I'm literally looking down at Eric Roberts' IMDb page right now. There is an impossible and an insane amount of movies under the 2013 title, both post-production, in production, and in pre-production. That's insane. There's like 20 or 30. I'm not kidding.
I haven't looked them up in a while. But
that's incredible. This is great for you, sir. Great for you. And what's the next? So leading on from that, what is the next step for you? Do you write more of these for Olivier directly, or are you going to start sending stuff to Seagal's company? Or...
Yeah, I'm going to call him up and tell him I love his beard and see if he'll...
should.
Have you heard any of our earlier shows? Because we had an idea about a TV show called Hong and Leong, about James Hong and Al Leong teaming up.
Yes.
That's right. I remember we had Twittered once about Talons of the Eagle, I think it was, with James Hong in it.
Yeah, James Hong, who I got to see, I got to interview, but I also got to see speak at the Philadelphia Comic Con, and obviously was in Safe, which was a great, great throwback to those movies. I mean, you've got to love, like, for everyone who's out there working, you know, we are big diehard Statham fans forever, because there's, you know, also, with interviews with Statham, he just gets it. He just understands it. This is what I can do. And within this genre, he's trying to work with great writers and great directors and different stars and different things, and do semi-serious work and then do, like, big bombastic stuff and true life stuff. But he's still sticking to kind of what he knows how to do. And I just thought Safe was a great, great hark back to those movies. And James Hong in the villain role, of course, which is always... You've got to have James Hong. And now James Hong is in RIPD, which is coming out soon as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, he's another solid bad guy in almost everything he does. I like him a lot, too.
Is your idea now to write more action movies?
Sorry, I forgot the question. Yeah,
no,
sorry.
It's fine. We're rambling anyway. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the genre, you know, I've grown up loving, and I want to stick to. I mean, I don't think I can really do any other genre. I don't know if I'd be able to do another genre as well. Hopefully, I've kind of been working really hard on that. Comedy is something I'd love to try one day. But, now that I've kind of carved that, that form that I want to keep doing the action, hopefully I can keep it up. I mean, Olivier and me kind of have kept a really cool working relationship. Like I said, when I went to go see the screen or the first cut, you know, we were talking about it. So, I mean, ultimately, I think we will hopefully be able to work together on the next project, whenever that may be. In the meantime, though, I definitely work on stuff for myself. Because, like I said, you always want to be ready, because, you know, when I had a chance meeting with Olivier Gruner, and I'm like, hey, I'm trying to be a screenwriter. He could, you know, all right, that's great. And if he's like, can I see something? I'm like, oh, I don't have anything. You know, then it's basically, there's no good can come of it. But to have something that I can say, okay, I'm trying to be a screenwriter. Here's my action screenplay, or I'll send him a couple scenes from it that he can then read and then hopefully be impressed with, kind of like what happened here. Or he'll send me a synopsis for a couple scenes and say, you know, write what you would write for this from the outline. And I send him a couple pages, and, you know, it's all about being ready when the chance comes, because, you know, I'm not in LA. It's not like I'm walking down the street and meet producers all the time. It was a total chance encounter. And I think the only reason it worked out is because I kept annoying him, and thank God he didn't kick me in the face after facebooking them every couple of months.
And of course, Speakman, which I just read today, because Speakman sadly has had cancer, but I just read today that he just did his first lesson back at the dojo in Vegas, because he's in Vegas as well, Speakman.
Yeah, I have kind of a crazy story about that. So obviously, like, Perfect Weapon was such a big movie for me when I was a kid.
Sure.
And, you know, Olivier Gruner, too. I grew up watching his stuff. So in the same week, I was working at a, unnamed retail electronics store. I guess I'll leave the title. That's where I was working my way through college. And in the same week, literally within days of each other, I met Olivier Gruner. And that's when I kind of annoyed him and said, here's my whatever. We Facebooked each other and kept in contact. And like 2 days later, Jeff Speakman comes into the store. And he was buying TVs. I think he was buying them for his studio, which, by the way, I peeked in one day on my way home from school, because it's kind of near where I went to college. And from what I remember, the inside of the studio is like decked out with all his movie posters. And he has like a TV playing his movies on a loop kind of constantly, which is really cool. I should take pictures of him and put it on Twitter one day. But he came in, and this is I recently lost quite a bit of weight. I was kind of a pudgy guy for a couple of years there. And he came in, and I introduced myself. Oh, I'm a big fan, yada, yada. And this is right when the studio, I think, was opening. He goes, oh, we just opened a Kenpo studio here in town. You should stop by. And he gave me his business card. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm a little out of shape to come. And he was like, oh, don't worry, we'll get you taken care of. And he kind of, like, tapped my belly. And I remember I was so proud. I walked around, like, Jeff Speakman just rubbed my belly. That's so cool.
That's nice.
Super embarrassing, but like, yeah, he just kind of was like, oh, come on down. And I never did. I really should.
Oh, man, you should do. You really should do.
He's never rubbed our bellies.
Yes.
That is true. But I hear Pam Grier had rubbed your, who was it? Whose beard did she rub?
Pam Grier touched my beard. I was actually going to mention Pam Grier, and I'll tell you why. When I met Pam when she was signing the books, the one question I got to ask her, unfortunately I don't have it on tape, but the one question I got to ask her while she was signing the book was about, there were two projects mooted when the Expendables hit big. One was this infamous untitled Adi Shankar project, which is basically the B-lister Expendables. So it was going to be Don the Dragon Wilson, Michael Dudikoff, I think they'd approach Speakman, and a few others. And then there was another one which was going under the name of Expendables, which they're trying to put together women of action.
Oh,
so it was going to be like Linda Hamilton and Sigourney Weaver and Pam Grier. And, you know, plus like Gina Carano and a bunch of others, the younger ones as well. And I asked Pam about this when I met her. And there's two stories I have about this. But her answer was, well, you know what, like, I'm in, but when the, because she's doing a bunch of like semi kind of action grindhouse movies kind of that are coming out soon for sort of women of her age, she said, I'm in, but we need a script. Like, no one's showing any of us a script. Mm-hmm. And the other time I heard that was when Bruce Campbell, who's a favorite of mine, horror icon, obviously, was saying when The Expendables came out, he wanted to do an Expendables of horror. In other words, like a horror comedy that had him and Jeffrey Combs and these guys in it. Mm-hmm. And he said, but we can't get a decent script. And I was going to say to you, like, it boggles my mind. I wonder what your take on it is, that there are these three projects which surely, like, are screaming out to be written. You know, a B-tier action movie with all the guys getting back together, because, you know, I think we had high hopes of like Seagal and Speakman and people like that showing up in Expendable sequels, but they seem to be going more A-list. It seems to be Nick Cage and Wesley Snipes and people like that, so we probably won't see that now as much as we did in the first one with people like Daniels and Austin and people like that showing up. But it boggles my mind that these three screenplays haven't been written and need to be written. So, Richard, I'm saying to you now, write them.
Oh, yeah, sure, I'll get on it.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, that kind of seems like, I don't know, because I kind of got the same thing here. When I had met Olivier, he had just finished his last movie, Regenerators, what it came out as. And so it had been like a year and a half, 2 years before he was ready to start the next one. And when I contacted him, he's like, oh, I'm glad you reminded me, because we're looking for someone to write it. And it seemed like they had been kind of looking for a while. And I'm, you know, in my mind, I would think people would be beating down guys' doors to get to work on a project like that. Because, I mean, regardless of, you know, no matter how this movie comes out, you know, people could hate it, but, you know, a movie with Olivier Gruner and it has its kind of built-in audience kind of waiting for it because he does have his fans. Same thing with like Eric Roberts or even someone like Gary Daniels. If Gary Daniels has a movie come out, even if I read a bad review, I'm going to rent it.
Right.
So, you know, it kind of seems strange to me that someone like Olivier Gruner could say, like, oh, yeah, we're waiting on a script. And, you know, it's like it's got a built-in audience. It's like almost like ready for success. Well,
moment the opening weekend of Expendables 1 was over, you know, 100 people should have started scribbling similar movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if a big... The crazy thing is if, like, a big Transformers or a Jurassic Park or something comes out, all of a sudden people are writing dinosaur movies and alien invasion movies, and you think, well, that takes tons of money and CGI and special effects, all the rest of it. This would be a movie about guys who already exist going somewhere cheap to film, like either Eastern Europe or Asia or South America, and kicking each other. I mean, there's no special effects involved.
The special effects are guys kicking each other. Like you said, I mean, the special effect is the star. Like, Statham can fight. Gary Daniels can fight. So that is the special effect. That's the same thing. And I mean, speaking from my experience, like, again, when I was in school, like taking screenwriting classes, that, you know, so there's a lot of kind of pretentious people in there that, like, you know, I'm sure would poo-poo me for writing in the genre I'm in. I mean, I'm not naive. This movie probably is going to be direct-to-video and all that stuff. But I don't mind that. This is the genre I love. I'm not trying to write an Academy Award-winning film. I'm not trying to write something that's going to, you know, whatever. It's a genre I like, and it's a genre I'm trying to work in. I mean, I like bad sci-fi movies. I don't know if you guys are, like, familiar with, like, the Asylum movies or something, like, kind of like what you were saying. Like, when Transformers comes out, they make Transmorphers. You know, people rat on that, but, I mean, that's fine. I mean, if it's entertaining, to me, it was always about entertainment. I don't need the movie to make me cry. I don't need it to change my life. If it entertains you for an hour and a half, that's its job. I didn't want to be, you know, my joke was always, you know, I don't want to write an Academy Award-winning screenplay. I want to write the next Steven Seagal. Like, that's my goal.
Right. But that's sensible, right, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to, you know, say I'm setting the bar low, but to me, I don't want to sound pretentious myself here, but, like, I've achieved, you know, by writing a movie with Olivier Gruner, that is something that I never would have imagined. And it's super cool to me because I grew up loving this guy's movies. It's just a crazy thing to think about. And it's
how many people in your screenwriting class have had a script actually produced? I would probably say one.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably low. I'm sure someone probably has.
They've all got scripts waiting for Daniel Day-Lewis and Meryl Streep, no doubt, to pick up and just read. But you've actually got a film made, so fuck them.
That's exactly right. Like, if I want to write something to star Tom Cruise, I mean, what are the odds, you know, of him ever even getting anything like that? I mean, but, you know, I'm not saying set the bar low, but, like, maybe, you know, there's nothing wrong with genre movies. Like, I'll watch a Sci-Fi Channel movie every now and then. Yeah, they're bad, but, like, they're fun movies. So that's, I think, being able to work, no matter what it is, that's my goal, is to be able to work at it. I don't necessarily need to, you know, like I said, change the world. Just, I want to be able to make, you know, be able to write movie after movie, hopefully one day, that people will enjoy. And if you laugh at it because it's corny, that's fine.
It's the best work ethic. I mean, everyone that I respect, either actor, writer, director, or whatever, had that work ethic starting out. You know, some have gone on to fame and fortune. Others have stayed in the straight-to-video realm. And, you know, I was just interviewing Jim Wynorski the other day.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, his statement was, you know what, they might have torn down the drive-ins, but Sci-Fi Channel and the straight-to-DVD movies, that's the drive-in of this generation. You know, we can't...
Absolutely.
You know, we can't help the fact that there aren't theaters out there screening them, but we can get them to you, you know, as best we can, as quickly as we can. And if you didn't like, you know, Sharktopus, don't worry, there's you know, Dino Croc or whatever coming up next, you know. So And there's whole websites and Facebook pages and stuff devoted to, like, straight to sci-fi channel movies, sure, and straight to video movies. And there's a, I mean, I would argue that to some extent the counterculture, certainly the people we come in contact with, is bigger and more thriving, especially with the internet and stuff, than you would ever think from maybe the outside perception of it.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned earlier, guys, I grew up kind of heroes in the filmmaking world. And Jim Warnorski is kind of one of those guys. Because, I mean, you look at him, you know, five, six, seven movies a year. I mean, nowadays, he's kind of getting into some, what do you want to say?
Erotica.
Yeah. Which, I mean, whatever. It's
titty movies.
Yes, exactly. Have you seen Papatopoulos, that
yes.
documentary?
But yes.
I love that documentary so much. Just his attitude, and it's all about just finishing the product and getting it out there. If people don't like it, like you said, the next one's coming out next week. So
yeah, I thought it was about some Greek guy, but
but no, I mean, yeah, that would be kind of, I mean, whatever happens, you know, who knows? This might be my one and only movie I ever get produced, but that would be, you know, to be able to just do it for a living, no matter what people think of it, to be able to enter, because I don't think anyone would watch one of Jim Warnorski's movies and walk away saying that was 100% unenjoyable. Every single one has some aspect that people will like, whether even if it's something like just, oh, I watched it for the tits, whatever, that's
right.
Fine. Or you go watch one of his giant Gila monsters or whatever it is. You know, people just like monster movies or whatever it is. So, I mean, as long as there's some little kernel of enjoyment in there, that's all I would be looking for. And, you know, it's just it's to be able to shut off your brain and enjoy a movie for an hour and a half. That's my goal. And to be able to do that consistently, hopefully, is where I want to be.
But your next step directly will be another film, you think, with Olivia Gruner, hopefully?
I think so, yeah. I mean, this one's finishing up. I don't know. Again, I'm not the guy in the room, but... hopefully it'll be a quick distribution process, but the final cut's done, and now they're moving on to the music and special effects and stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing the final product, hopefully in the next few months. So he's busy with that, so I don't want to pester him too much with the next project. He has some ideas that we've kind of pitched back and forth and thought about. So
B-Team, yeah, Expendables, B-Team Expendables, definitely.
I know he's friends with, like, Don Wilson and those guys, so who knows? I don't know if he was ever involved in that project. But
if they need ideas, the Doc and I have, like, 100 of them.
I'm
seriously.
Sure. And it's to me, I don't see why that isn't already done. I mean, to me, that would be a perfect project. So, yeah, I mean, if that could – that needs to get off the ground, whatever. Whoever's in charge of that one needs to get on that, because that would be a great film.
Yeah.
Well, if you write it, Richard, and you need two skinny white British guys to be in it.
Yeah,
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, if you're ever around the set again of another movie and you want to say, you know what, there are a couple of guys who love this kind of film and would really appreciate an interview, you know.
That's why I should definitely get you guys involved. I actually got to be in this movie in Private Contractors for. I have like half a line.
Awesome.
And then, when I was at the set, I got to dress up in the military gear and look like a soldier.
Awesome.
And I got to deliver my line very poorly. I remember there were two other guys. Actually, there were friends of mine who were in the scene, and we each had our lines. We're all kind of going back and forth. And Olivier, because he's directing, had very specific notes for one of my buddies. He was like, okay, maybe say it slower, maybe have a little more emotion at the end. And he went to my other friend, had very specific notes. And then he turned to me, and I'm a terrible actor. And he goes, Richard, do it again, but just do it better. And that was his acting advice for me. And,
nice.
Yeah, so that's my one performance that's going to be in this movie. So hopefully, yeah,
that's
I
awesome.
Mean, you guys, hopefully if we do another one, you guys come down and replace me in it.
Yeah, no, I was just being cheeky, really. Don't worry about that. But, did you have anything more you wanted to talk about, Doc?
I was going to say, dream team, then. If you could make your own buddy cop film, which two actors would you write for?
Or indeed, your B-Team Expendables, either one.
Yeah.
I mean, Speakman was a huge one for me. If I were doing Expendables, Speakman, Gruner, Dudikoff was a big one for me as a kid. I really liked him. Cynthia Rothrock, although I don't know if that would cross into the the female one or not.
I think they should blend it. I think that screw female one and all. I mean, do a female one as well, by all means. But I really don't understand why the second Expendables had that female actress in it. And it wasn't it wasn't like Michelle Yeoh, or it wasn't like Cynthia Rothrock or someone like that.
That was a little odd to me, too, because I mean, I don't remember her in any movies before or since. But then again, I'm, you know, haven't been able to see too many movies lately. But yeah, those guys, I mean, I grew up with, I don't know, aside from Talons at Eagle, I really like Billy Blank's movies. He made a bunch of good stuff in the 90s. Jalal Murhi, I don't know if you've seen much of his stuff. Enjoyed him. I don't know if he's still making movies or not, though. He directed quite a few of Olivier's movies, actually. He did the Circuit series. I don't know if you guys ever saw those, but Jalal Murhi directed, I think, all three of the Circuit movies with Olivier Gruner in them.
Cool.
But yeah, those guys, the basics. I mean, there's, I'm trying to think who else. But yeah, those guys would probably be in my my B-team Expendables.
Well, we'll send you some ideas, and then let's get this on the road to getting made, because you know, I think that the time to fully capitalize on it would have probably been, you know, 2-3 years ago, but the light's still flickering a little, so it was nice to see, and I just looked it up, it is Hunt to Kill, that the three guys who obviously did the most together on the set of Expendables 1, which was Steve Austin, Gary Daniels, and Eric Roberts, they did all then.
Oh, I forgot. Eric Roberts was in the first scene of that, right?
Yeah, they did all then and work on Hunt to Kill almost back to back with that movie, and that's cool. I mean, maybe we won't ever see a big B Expendables, but maybe we'll see. You know, hopefully Rothrock might do another movie with Norton, or you know.
Oh yeah, Richard Norton.
In fact, she just did a Dragon Wilson movie. She just did movie with Don in it. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he was another guy I really liked. The Blood Fist series. I remember when I was a kid, those came out so quickly. It was like Blood Fist 6, Blood Fist 7. And,
I've got them all, yeah.
Yeah. Took me a while to track them. I think I have all of them on DVD now. But
we will be doing those at some point.
Oh, good, definitely.
Did you have anything else, Doc?
I think that's everything. Oh, just congratulations on the film.
Yes, congrats. And did you want to just give us a quick sort of byline about what it's about? Just sort of what would your sort of 2 or 3 line pitch be about the movie?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it was you got to think like Expendables kind of mixed with Missing in Action a little bit. It's a kind of a standard story of his a team gets left behind and Olivier's got to go back to get them. The cool parts of this movie, I think, are going to be there's a lot of training in it. There were Olivier went through this actual training to do it on screen. A lot of cool gun stuff. The training sequences are really cool to watch. I remember when I was writing it, there seemed to be a lot, and I was kind of worried about that. But they really come across very interesting, very fun to watch him do all the training that's in the movie. He does a lot of his MMA stuff that he's into now, gun disarming and gun range stuff. And the action's really solid. But yeah, just a team of private contractors, of mercenaries get stuck behind enemy lines. Olivier gets out and he's got to go back to save his team.
Cool. Very, very cool. Well, look, congratulations again, man. Thanks ever so much for doing this. It was great talking to you. Please keep in touch as well, because we want to get the information out about private contractors on our website and stuff. Pictures or any trailers or anything like that that come from either behind the scenes or the finished movie, let us know and we'll put them up on the site and we'll start ringing the bell for it, dude, so we get some
absolutely. Yeah, like I said, I don't know exactly a release date yet. They haven't even finished it, so sure. I will keep you guys posted, so as soon as it's ready to go, you guys will be the first I'll tell.
Yeah, well, when it's actually released, come back on the show and we'll give it another shout for you and you can give it
absolutely, that'd be great
as well.
Yeah, definitely, awesome. Man, definitely. And, well, best of luck in the future, man. Best of luck with whatever you choose to do.
No, I'll definitely keep you guys posted, and I definitely appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you, man. I hope you didn't mind, like, me rambling. I tend to do that.
No, we were all talking about our favorite action movies, so that's absolutely fine. No worries. I don't ever mind talking about that stuff.
Cool. All right, man. Well, take it easy and have a good evening.
You as well. Oh, follow me on Twitter, everybody. I'm trying to get more on Twitter.
Oh, yes. Where can people find you online? Yes, go right
ahead. Oh, well, guys, you can find me at rich_pierce12, P-I-E-R-C-E 12. on Twitter. I'm really new to it. You guys were actually one of the first people I followed on Twitter. I just kind of searched for action movies, or maybe I even searched for someone like Gary Daniels, and you guys popped up. So, but yeah, definitely follow me on Twitter. I'm trying to build on that.
Well, actually, when your name came up on Twitter, and I saw that you were following us, I thought, ooh. And because you don't get many people who sort of say, "Oh, I love action movies."
Oh, well, definitely.
That was good.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely, man. And spread the word. And if there are any big budget action film producers out there listening, please call me. Let me know. I am available to write.
Definitely, definitely. And keep it up. As I say, write as many expendable style movies as possible. And then let's get that into production. Who knows? We may our paths may cross once again.
Absolutely, we gotta get to work on that B Team Expendables. We'll have to get on that.
Yes, definitely, definitely. But anyway, Richard, thanks ever so much for talking
with us.
Hey,
no worries.
Yes,
let me know when this goes up, and I'll give it a listen.
Cool. Well, we will do. We'll include you in the tweets and put you on the page and stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Look at that right there. No technical mishaps whatsoever. We just that was nice and good. That was a great interview, wasn't it?
It was very good.
I enjoyed talking to Richard a lot. What a decent guy. What a good guy.
Very nice. It was always good when you hear somebody do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's gone out and he's achieved his dream, you know, and it's going to carry on rather than being sort of like, well, I sent my script off to Miramax and they made it for £1 million.
We should announce, actually, that the news that we found out this week is that our favourite foreign film about the crippled gentleman and his African-American friend is being remade for American audiences who can't be bothered to read subtitles. And it's going to possibly star Colin Firth as the cripple with Chris Tucker as his laughing, annoyingly high-pitched voiced friend.
Oh, doesn't that just make you feel good to be alive?
It's going to be a heartwarming tale of people in wheelchairs and their happy life. Can't wait.
Excellent.
But yeah, no, that was a great interview, man. That was a great interview, and I liked that a lot. And yeah, it's exciting. I hope he does. We should really, I tell you what, we should really write some scripts, dude. That's what we need to do.
I've got ideas. Let's do it.
Yeah. So we need to do that. But anyway, let's quickly do our week in action, dude, as we didn't do that before the show. Let's quickly run down what we've seen and have a bit of a geek out about Iron Man 3. So anyway, look, if you haven't seen Iron Man 3, stop listening now, I guess. Well, let's do our week in action and then we'll do Iron Man 3 and people can turn off then.
Right, well, I forgot to. Did I mention on the last show I've seen Olympus Has Fallen?
Oh, see, I love that movie.
Very good.
What did you think of it, sir?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. It's very good. It's very Die Hard in the White House.
Yeah, although have you seen the second trailer for White House Down?
Not yet. I've seen the first trailer.
I'm not even kidding. Channing Tatum is in a vest.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
I'm not even. And it's. If you thought, the trailer really should have been like, if you thought Olympus Has Fallen was Die Hard in the White House, you ain't seen nothing yet. White House Down. And then, like, just have Channing Tatum come through the smoke in a vest. Going like, yippee-ki-yay, mofos.
Mother trucker.
And then, like, Jamie, whatever his name is, showing up going, you can't say that.
What else did that? I went to the cinema the other night and I saw Dead Man Down with Colin Farrell.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Colin Firth, and I was like, was he the dead man?
Yeah, saw that. That's,
what was that like?
It's good. Have you seen the trailer?
I have, by the filmmaker behind the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy.
Right.
Splurgeon.
Yes. Yeah. So it looks like a big action film in the trailer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
No.
The ending is, and there's action in there, but it's more like a European thriller, revenge thriller.
Revenge.
But it's good. It's good. I felt watching it, it was very much like Leon or something like that.
Leon. Nice.
Very good. It's not bad. It's worth watching. I did enjoy it.
What have I watched? I watched Jack Reacher again last night.
Yeah, I've watched that again as well.
Oh, I got that on Blu-ray because it's awesome. We got Parker coming out. Not next week, the week after. 21st, Parker is out here, and so is Last Stand.
Same day?
Yeah.
I've got Last Stand on the 27th.
Yeah, that's annoying. And Bullet to the Head, still not got a release date. So
oh, I've got that. That's got 1st of June.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
Die Hard 5 has got a release date before Bullet to the Head, which is a bit annoying.
Yeah, June 10th. I've got 1 week Last Stand, then Bullet to the Head, then Die Hard.
I watched Fist of the North Star last night.
Yeah, we'll be doing that next week.
We are. That will be our show next week. Sorry, the commentaries have been away for a while, but that's just the way it goes sometimes. Get over it. But no, I watched Fist of the North Star. I liked Fist of the North Star, sir. I enjoyed it quite a bit, actually.
It's Daniels, isn't it?
Yeah. It's Daniels.
Daniels.
Paul Daniels. And what have we got to look forward to coming up in the movie theatres? Anything?
Yeah, Fast and Furious 6.
Fast and Furious. I've got to get on that. I've got to watch the first 5.
Yeah, so I'm going to be there next Friday. Woo-hoo. Can't wait. But the main film that we've both seen, I'm going to say it now, I loved it.
Yeah.
Did you love Iron Man 3?
I loved Iron Man 3, but I think I loved Iron Man 3 probably the same way you loved Iron Man 3. I think everyone else was like, well, I don't know if this is an Iron Man film. I loved it because about every 5 minutes I kept spotting something that was a throwback to 80s and 90s movies. I mean,
This is the perfect... You see, we've been saying that the superhero films are basically taken over. This is the perfect blend of superhero movies and 90s kind of action.
You got William Sadler as the president. I hoped he was going to be called President Trent so that it was the senator from Hard to Kill had come back to life and made it to president.
Yep. Miguel Ferrer.
I take that to the bank, President Trent, to the blood bank. Yeah, we've got Miguel Ferrer showing up in a kind of speechless role, but still very cool. We had old Ben Kingsley. He was fucking awesome, wasn't he?
He was. But very good.
I like the fact that Shane Black was, you know what, I don't want this to be a movie about him whizzing around in a CGI suit. So he contrived to basically, like, every opportunity to, like, get rid of Iron Man and, like, shit on comic book movies and say yay to action movies, they seemingly took.
You're talking about how War Machine loses his as well. So basically, at the end, it's Riggs and Murtaugh.
Yes, isn't it Riggs and Murtaugh when they're running around? Not only that, but they contrive to have it on a fucking, like, you know, factory ship, you know. And it was at Christmas. Did you notice? It was set at fucking Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas. It's basically the end of Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah, it's Kiss Kiss, Lethal Iron Man Weapon, Bang Bang.
Yeah, I think Jon Favreau's called it, hasn't he? Kiss Kiss Clang Clang.
Yeah. But I thought that's fucking awesome. I honestly, you know, as a superhero movie, I can take it or leave it. As a sort of subversive bringing 80s and 90s action movies back into the multiplex and then it becoming the second largest grossing opening weekend of all time, that I secretly fucking love.
Yeah, well, I wasn't sort of up for seeing it. I was sort of like, well, I'll go and see it. But my expectations were very low. Very low. And I watched it, expectations low, and I came out and I tweeted you straight away and said, oh, I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Because it's just perfect. For me, it's perfect. It's what I think a superhero film should be.
The fact that by the end it was Riggs and Murtaugh running around on like an industrial ship, you know, Crane area. I was just like, and it was set at Christmas. And I mean, it was so good for all those reasons.
Do you think Robert Downey Jr. will return
to the role of Iron Man?
Yeah.
I don't know, because they really need to. I mean, I think he'll do Avengers 2. I think.
Yeah.
I think if Marvel pony up and pay, because there's a big pay discrepancy between Downey Jr. and the rest of the cast. Now, that was because he negotiated his contract at a different time and the rest of the cast were not as well known and bloody, bloody, blah, blah. But you can't have a movie with Avengers 2 with him earning like 50 mil plus a back end and the rest of them still on like 500,000, which is what it was like the first movie. Apart from, I think, Scarlett Johansson and...
Chris Evans must have got a bit more. He's fairly well known, isn't he?
No, he got 500,000 the first film. It was Scarlett Johansson.
Is that all he got?
Yeah. They get a piece of the back end, I think, but I don't know how much, because what I don't understand is Marvel then went, oh, yeah, you get a piece of the back end, but once we break even, which will be at $1.1 billion, how is that breaking even then exactly?
It's not breaking even, is it?
No, that's like making $500 million profit. So I don't understand. But anyway, so they get everything that it earns over $1.1 billion or something, or a percentage of it. But the it was only Scarlett Johansson and Samuel L. Jackson who have multi-picture
deals,
which is why she's cropping up in the Winter Soldier or whatever it is. Is it Thor she crops up in, or does she crop in Captain America?
I bet it's Captain America.
But that we're not getting an individual Hulk movie. There's no Hawkeye or Black Widow movie on the horizon.
I can't say that I blame them for not making a Hulk movie, because I think a Hulk movie on its own could be terrible.
Yeah. I think I think what's interesting is that you know, I'm sure Joss Whedon, I think he jokingly said after seeing Iron Man 3, he was like, well, now what the fuck am I going to do? Because, you know, Avengers 2 has to happen after Iron Man 3. And of course you could write, like, you know, of course Iron Man 3 sort of is a little open-ended. It's not as closed door as it would make out. But even so, it does sort of... you know, it does take Tony, without wanting to spoil... Oh, look, if you're listening this far, you've seen it. It does kind of take Tony back to nothing again, back to zero.
Yeah, it does.
Because his tower was destroyed at the end of Avengers. His Malibu house was destroyed at the end of... halfway through Iron Man 3. All his other Iron Men, are of which he had like 40 or whatever, get destroyed at the end of Iron Man 3. I like the way, though, that Shane Black's such a cheeky cunt, though, because he wrote this whole thing where it's like, oh, you know, Happy's going to be all crippled and Pepper's going to be all the thing and Tony's still got this metal in his chest and stuff. And he just wrote a voiceover at the end that just went, yeah, I cured all that. And while I was at it, I cured myself as well. Bye! Joss Whedon must have watched that and went, oh, you cheeky fuck. Why'd you gone and done that? That's great.
Is he going to do, oh, they won't give me the budget to film it. Oh, the bastards.
Realistically,
he just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. But no, he's got like a multi-picture Marvel deal, Whedon has, so he's okay. They need to renegotiate Downey Jr.'s contract, which, you know, they were stupid. They should have done either before Iron Man 3 or while Iron Man 3 was being made. Because now that Iron Man 3 is like the second biggest opening weekend of all time, they're going to have to pony up some coin. And he's already said in interviews, I'm not working on the Avengers 2 unless they pay my colleagues fairly. Because he was really disgusted the way that the pay inequality on the first movie.
Yeah.
So he's like, unless...
a million.
Sorry?
He's got a million.
Yeah.
They deserve a million each. I'll have mine 50 and dirty 20.
It's all very noble of you, Downey, but if you really felt that badly, why didn't you just go,
Split the fucker.
Yeah, I got 50 million. Why don't we just split it? Because it's not like he needs more money at this point.
No, he doesn't. I mean, in some ways, it has reinvented him. Iron Man has. So, I mean, he should. If it was me, I think at this point, I think I'd just be like, game, yeah, I'll make one every couple of years. The money's good and people love me as in. So fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to see him just do this and Sherlock, though, for the rest of his life. I'd like him to do...
Oh, no, I'd like to see him in the remake of, you know, The Cripple and the... with Nick Fury.
Yeah, with Nick Fury. Nick Fury and Iron Man remake The Untouchables. That would be great.
Or Don Cheadle. They're back. In like an Iron Man wheelchair.
With rocket launchers on the side.
Rocket boosters.
Yeah. Isn't Iron Man 3 a remake of The Untouchables anyway, if we're honest?
Yeah. It's not as good.
It's not as much happy running around meadows.
Yeah. We're going to see the local guy at the Chinese. He's like, can I have some chicken balls, please? You'll never see me coming. I'd love to talk about that bit, but I really don't want to spoil that.
Oh, that was some funny shit. That had me absolutely wetting myself in the cinema.
And I did not fucking see it coming. That's the best part.
Fucking genius. He is a fucking genius, Ben Kingsley.
Sexy Beast is probably the best role ever.
Yeah, I agree.
I cut your fucking hand off and turned it into an ashtray.
All right then, Chief. Did we have anything else to say?
Fist of the North Star coming up.
Oh, yeah. Statham definitely confirmed for part 7.
For Fast 7?
Fast 7, yeah, definitely. No word as to whether he actually does have a cameo in 6 or not. But he's listed.
He's listed on IMDb.
He's definitely in 7. Because she's only confirmed him. Michelle Rodriguez has only confirmed him for the next movie, not for this one.
Oh, she's probably been told not to say anything.
Have you seen the trailer for the 6th one, dude?
Yeah.
Looks fucking awesome.
Just the plane coming out the front of the car. The car coming out the front of the plane. Just looks... And the Gina Carano, Michelle Rodriguez fight in the underground looks fucking fantastic.
Yeah. I can't wait, dude. I can't wait.
You have to get through all of them.
Yeah, I can do that pretty quickly. Yeah. Okay, so that was a very special episode of...
Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid Commentary Podcast.
He's been Dr. Action.
He's been the Kick-Ass Kid.
And together we are... The Happy Minstrels.
No. And you've all been fucking gorgeous.
You've all been gold, matey. Gold.
Been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We Came from the Basement, No Budget Nightmares, The After Movie Diner, Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, and Bloodbaths and Boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place that your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms, from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today, and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell, who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?